Einen wunderschönen guten Morgen, ihr hört Insert Moin, ich bin der Daniel und unser Podcast-Thema heute Morgen ist, was macht eigentlich ein Narrative Designer oder ein Writer in der Games-Branche? Dafür habe ich mir Rihanna Pratchett eingeladen. Das ist, bei manchen wird der Name Pratchett das ein oder andere Glöckchen läuten, die Tochter von Terry Pratchett. Und sie hat uns im Interview mal erklärt, was sie macht und an welchen Spielen sie schon mitgearbeitet hat. Deswegen jetzt ohne große Umschweife viel Spaß mit dem Gespräch mit Rihanna Pratchett. So, this is Insert Moin. My guest today is Rihanna Pratchett. So, hello to the UK.
Hi there. Hi, Germany.
thanks very much for being a guest in our podcast. And I know it's highly unlikely, but just in case someone has never heard your name, maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself and the games you've already been working on.
Sure. I am a writer stroke narrative designer for games, with probably more of the emphasis on writer. So I started out in the games industry as a games journalist. I took a degree in journalism and I ended up working on the late great PC Zone magazine in the UK, which was, I think, the UK's longest running PC games magazine at the time, and yeah, I was a games journalist for a few years and went around the world visiting developers and seeing them put their games together and interviewing them about the process and reviewing and previewing and discovering little indie games and things. And then I did that for a few years and then left to go freelance. My first gig in development was as a story editor for Larian Studios, who are based in Belgium, their game Beyond Divinity, which was a standalone sequel to Divine Divinity, which was a game of theirs that I really liked. And I think I was the only person in the games industry, in the UK games industry, who really liked it. And I think everyone else had been sort of, it's okay. But I was like, I really enjoyed it. And I think they remembered me. And a couple of years later, they were thinking about needing a story editor, sort of a native English speaker, to help them polish up their script, which had been written by a non-speaker, and just help them with a few bits and pieces. So they thought of me. And you know, I'd just gone freelance, and it seemed like a really good idea. So I started, I'd worked on that for a bit and, you know, done a few kind of bits and pieces. I kind of came out of that job thinking, oh, okay, this looks kind of interesting. I didn't really know about games writing as a career because it didn't really exist as a career on its own. Obviously writing was being done in games, but more often than not it was by designers. So there were kind of writer designers. And some great ones out there, like Christy Marks, who's the hero of mine in the games industry, worked on, you know, some of my favourite games when I was younger, like Conquest of Camelot, for instance. Worked on a lot of great adventure games. So a lot of the writing at the time was being done by designers. It wasn't being done by specialised writers or professional writers. Although, you know, writer designers obviously have professional writers, but they're not just specialised in writing. Mm-hmm. And so I went to some of the contacts I'd made as a journalist and just said, hey, I'm doing game writing for games now, and if you need any help with your narrative, let me know. And that sort of worked out, and I started getting little gigs. I wrote, some level dialogue for a SpongeBob game and a Pac-Man game. And then I think my first sort of, I guess, slightly more serious game was Stronghold Legends for Firefly Studios in London. I've been a big fan of their Stronghold series of games. And then my first sort of big title was Heavenly Sword on the PS3. So that was just as the PS3 has been coming out. So I've been doing this job for a whole console, whole console generation, basically. So that was one of the first games, I think, to utilize facial and body mode capture at the same time, to capture both at the same time, because they're often done separately. And we had Andy Serkis, very well-known mocapture artist, doing our kind of mocapture performances. So he actually directed all our mocapture performances, and he was the antagonist in the game, King Bohan. And so it was great working with him, and also the likes of Anna Torv, who then went on to do Fringe. So yeah, that's kind of a long explanation of my kind of game career to date. And alongside games, I also do film writing for film and TV and comics and short stories and the occasional kind of non-fiction book about games writing as well.
Mm-hmm. You said that you are a narrative designer / writer. Is there a difference between these two?
Sure. I mean, I'm probably writer / narrative designer. I'd say writer is my major and narrative designer is my minor, really. So a writer is more or less is sort of focused on the story, the overarching story, the dialogue, the characters, their relationships, etc. So what we traditionally think of as a story, across all entertainment media. A narrative designer is more concerned with the mechanics by which the story is told. So how narrative intersects with design. And a narrative designer will usually have come from the design camp and have a particular interest in narrative. And they will have one leg in the writing camp and one leg in the design camp as well. And they really help dovetail narrative and game design together. So sometimes the writer can also be the narrative designer, and they'll be also working on the mechanics, and they'll be talking to the level designers and helping actually embed the story into the game. And sometimes I've done that before. On bigger games, you will often have narrative designers on staff. So on something like Tomb Raider, I worked with John Stafford, who is Crystal Dynamics' senior narrative designer, and he was my main port of call on the team. So I work freelance. So I work with game development studios all around the world, and I kind of go on site for a few weeks at a time. But mostly what I do is off-site and remote. I use messengers, Skype, etc. to conduct the conversations that I need to, and email and stuff like that. And technology has made the world a lot smaller, so it's much easier to do that now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
please go ahead.
That's really how narrative designers and writers work. They can be the same person. They can be different people. You can get narrative designers that are maybe not working on the writing side of things, but still working on the writers. So they're not necessarily doing writing themselves, but they're doing more overview stuff and more concerned with mechanics. But mostly narrative designers do have some experience in writing, even if they're not doing writing on a particular project. They're probably, they probably have their own writing projects or something elsewhere.
Well, I guess it also depends on the scope and the budget of the project. If you have a big budget project, you most likely have more people doing the writing. And if you only have a small indie team, probably the writer, gameplay designer, and narrative designer will be the same person.
Often. I mean, with smaller teams, there's much more of a sense of having to pitch in with everything. So when I was working on something like Overlord, not a few people team, less than 30, including outside contractors, I'd say. So not like the big kind of Ubisoft, BioWare teams. But I could have direct access to all the designers in that kind of situation. So there was no narrative designer. I was kind of a narrative designer or one of them. So it meant I had direct contact with all the level designers, so they could talk to me about their levels. I could talk to them about what needed to happen in the story, and we could work together to make sure that the script that I came up with fitted their level well. On something like Tomb Raider, again, John would be the conduit between myself and the rest of the team, so he'd be kind of briefing me on what was needed from the story, and I'd be sort of talking to him about the characters and the arcs and the emotional beats and all the kind of writing stuff. And I'd be going over and working with him and the creative director. to kind of get everything together. But the narrative designer, it's been around as a term for a long time. I think Mary DeMarle from IJOS Montreal was the first person to coin that title when she was back in Ubisoft. It's now fairly common on the big teams, narrative designer, and I think it's actually helped narrative no end having those specialised people that have kind of, one, as I said, one foot in camp and one foot in the camp of narrative.
So in your experience, if you are a writer on a big project, does that mean that like every single line of dialogue and story is written by one person in that case?
Not usually. Like something like Overlord, everything was written by me down to weapon text. And especially as the studio I was dealing with were a Dutch studio, so they were more than happy for me to do all the kind of writing bits. But they would kind of do what's called scratch dialogue in the industry. So for a while, Overlord was narrated with heavy Dutch accents because all the staff would pitch in and read out the lines so you could kind of test triggering and things like that. But on the bigger the game, the more writers they're going to need because it depends on the kind of game. So on the first Tomb Raider, the writing was done by myself and John. I was there for quite a while on my own, with Noah Hughes, the creative director, sort of basically begging Noah every time I spoke to him to get a narrative designer on the team. And John was eventually hired probably about a year or so before the game shipped. So John worked a lot of the secondary stuff. So the AI combat box and some of the shared the load. And on Rise, I kind of worked on the cinematic script and the Lara side of things, so Lara's journal, Lara's father's journals, Lara's therapy sessions. We had Cameron Sui, who's a narrative designer that was hired for Rise. He worked on extra journals and archaeology texts for finds and things like that, and a lot of the secondary narrative that John was working on in the first game. We also used a guy called Philip Gillat, who is a screenwriter, and he came on towards the end of the process just to be another pair of narrative eyes and help us kind of polish up scenes and give us feedback. And so that became a sort of a four-person writing team. Mm-hmm. But even that can be quite small when compared to something like The Witcher or the Assassin's Creed teams. When we were up for the Writers Guild, we realised that we were actually one of the smallest teams there, and yet four people seems like a luxury compared to how it used to be, which, as you say, was just one person doing everything.
So how early in development do writers usually get involved in the project? Is it really at the beginning, or is it usually that in the last few months of development you get on as sort of like a fire worker to kind of like, oh god, we still need a story, and so we need someone to write a story?
Well, thankfully there's no longer people actually forgetting to put a story in, although sometimes things have felt like they might as well have forgotten. It depends. It's kind of difficult to say because it depends on a few things. It depends on the narrative sensibilities of the team, like how important one, narrative is in their game, and two, how important they think narrative is in their game, which can be different things. So obviously games that are very front-loaded with their narrative, adventure games, role-playing games, they will often have writers there right at the start. There will often be nowadays full-time staff members. So if you take Telltale or BioWare, they have writers on staff. With freelance writers, it can be anything from a year, 2 years into the process to 6 months before the end, to even a couple of months before the end in the worst case scenarios. So it becomes more common to get some kind of writing stroke narrative involvement in the early days. It's harder when you're freelance. It's more unlikely to happen when you're freelance because you're not in a studio and you don't have, well, when you work freelance, you sort of give up power for freedom. So you don't have the power that you would have as an in-house writer, an in-house narrative designer, but you do get more freedom to work on various projects at the same time or on across different mediums.
So is writing for games like fundamentally different than writing as a journalist or writing a book or writing a TV show, as you already pointed out, you already also did? Is writing still writing and across all media, or is it still very different if you write for games?
There are some differences. There's also some similarities as well, and it's just in the tenets of good storytelling, really. Those are, you know, central to all storytelling mediums. So there is that crossover there, understanding about story and characters, and kind of relationships and conflict and drama and all those things that are central to good storytelling. They're still all there. But what makes games fundamentally different is, one, they are not usually story-led and have not had a history of being story-led. So every other entertainment media is story-led. The script comes first. That's not the case in games. I think occasionally you might get a script early on. I think with Heavenly Sword, there was a script early on and then that was rewritten. But that is very, very unprecedented. It's all almost always the script is written at the same time that the game is developed, which is, it's the equivalent of writing a movie whilst the movie is being shot at the same time. And so that in itself is hugely challenging because you're having to react to what all the other teams are doing. So what level design is doing particularly. So your script is going to have to be flexible enough to cope with the fact that, okay, now you need to go back and kill off this character because the you know level designers decided that they're going to have this situation where let's say Lara has to go and rescue someone. We're going to kill off this character, so now you have to go back and write them out of scenes, which, you know, I'm not joking, that happens twice on Tomb Raider. I know that's a bit of a spoiler, but yeah, I had to go and kill off characters. You have to move around scenes because the gameplay changes, the environment changes, things get moved around, and you're sort of you've got to kind of react to that. And at the same time, ideally, gameplay and level design will be reacting to the things that need to happen in the story. So there should be some sort of kind of close relationship to what's happening in narrative and what's happening in design. I mean, a lot of the grunt work, if story is being given enough time, will be done sort of during the planning phases of the game and the pre-production phases. So with something like Rise of the Tomb Raider, Crystal, that being John and Noah and a couple of other key staff members, they worked up some early concepts for Rise based on the things the studio wanted to do, where they wanted to take Lara and, you know, some ideas. And then they opened it up to me and I came over and I did a sort of story summit with them and I turned that into a new treatment, which would be similar to a treatment that you would see for a screenplay. We do things in a sort of, well, at least a central script to Tomb Raider is done in a very cinematic way, and that includes some of the areas of production as well. And then that got turned by John later on into the process of what we call a meta script, which is sort of a kind of breakdown of every scene and what needed to be in that scene from a mechanical kind of gameplay point of view, i.e. the gameplay that was happening before Lara went into the scene, the gameplay that might be happening as she's exiting it, anything that was kind of pertinent I needed to know for that scene, like this scene is in, you know, a mountain pass or whatever, this character and that and Lara and her objective is this. So he would give me the sort of the main central information points of the scene, and then I would kind of work that up into a scene. And we usually did that as a, you know, a sort of three-act structure, more or less, and in a linear way. With something like Overlord, it wasn't written in the linear way. I had an overview of what was going to happen through the whole story and how that would be broken down through the levels. But I had to write it in line with the order that the levels were being produced, which was not linear. So that, like, I might have to, you know, write 1 and then 5 and then 2 and then 3, and then so I kind of wrote them out of order and then sort of put them together again.
Mm-hmm. But that's one thing that I think is exclusive about games, is that there's always a discrepancy between gameplay and story, because usually gameplay is more important, as you already said, and sometimes gameplay designers change something and then you have to adapt your story towards that. And I remember you telling a funny story back at Nordic Game. I just have to tell that we met a few weeks ago at Nordic Game in Malmö. And you said that a thing about Tomb Raider, a scene where Lara actually struggles with killing a person, and at which point in the story she had already killed a few dozen people, and so which kind of like took the impact of how this scene was meant. And you said that in the end you were also surprised how your writing was implemented in the game, because I think they changed the order of the levels, and so they kind of like changed the whole tone of the scene, how it was actually meant, right?
Well, it wasn't that she killed people before that scene. Like, there had been an accidental death. She hadn't actually killed someone, but someone had been killed in a rock slide that was coming after her in the cave. So she hadn't killed anyone at that point. So it didn't. So it was the first human kill that she had kind of knowingly done. So it was originally. I think from the first, when Lara kills for the first time, it was supposed to be quite impactful, and it was supposed to be kind of shake her a lot, and you know, and Camilla did a great performance of that. And then later on, she speaks to a mentor about it and says, she says to him, "I had to kill someone," and he said that can't have been easy, Lara, and she says it's scary how easy it was, and. Between that scene and her speaking to Roth, her mentor, there wasn't originally going to be kills. And then we were getting feedback from playtesters that they had guns, they wanted to use it. So there was a lot of back and forth between narrative and level design about, you know, she then goes on to kill kind of lots of other people. So I had to sort of change the tone of the scene. So it's like she's had to kill some people, but it was quite a lot of kills. In between those two scenes, and it's an inherently gamey problem, and it sort of ties into what we expect as gamers.
Mm-hmm.
And we are conditioned, like we get a weapon, we get things to hit with the weapon, and we're kind of used to that. So obviously we were getting feedback from our playtesters about yeah, they got a weapon, they wanted to use it, and so that's why those decisions were made. So that sort of shows you the battles that are going on. So the needs of narrative, the needs of gameplay, and then the needs of the players as well. So you're kind of having to balance that in the kind of entire time, and also the how players react to something is also. With the big titles is often always being fed back on. So, I mean, I can't remember if I said this in Nordic as well. So playtesting, for example, happens the entire way through the development process. So that is like, again, like doing a film as if you had like an audience there the entire time watching the whole of the game being put together or the film being put together, I should say, and reacting to it. That's kind of how you have to go through. So constant feedback from internal testers, external testers, your other team members, the publishers, and your the whole process. So you're trying to create a you know, your story whilst also getting feedback on it at the same time. So it's a bit like trying to write a screenplay with a possible audience member leaning over your shoulder going, "Oh, I don't like that. Oh, I don't think he'd say that." It's quite unique in that way. I mean, obviously, movies and TV, they do screenings, especially if they want to change the ending or they're not sure about some aspect. And that's usually towards the end of a film's production period. This happens all the way through with game development, which also makes it very hardcore to deal with. This is mainly in the AAA space, obviously, but the smaller you get, you're not really going to have quite so many levels of playtesters and feedback happening.
How closely do writers or how closely did you work with the voice actors? Because sometimes when you play a game, you get the feeling that the voice actors didn't really know what the scene was about. They just got their text and kind of like read out their lines, and then it just feels oddly disrupted from actually what is happening in the scene, because you realize, okay, they probably didn't even know what the other person was saying. So
yeah, I mean, that is one issue that happens a lot during development, in that actors for a long time never used to be in the same room together acting, so they're often acting against someone else who would then be recording their lines weeks later. Or, you know, in some cases, if you had to stretch your voice actors, they may be acting against themselves doing a different voice. and which you have to find very good voice actors that can kind of pull that off. But, you know, as we started to use things like MoCapture and taking actors into MoCapture studios, we Tomb Raider, we had that, all the actors working together. And we spent, again, with the talk we did at the GDC Narrative Summit this year, that's available on the GDC Vault, and we talk about what we did in Tomb Raider and what we learned from it, and how we then took that into working on Rise and trying to make the production more smooth. And part of that was opening things up to feedback earlier from everyone, which was to try and avoid suddenly having to do something quite dramatic near the end of the process. Like we had to change the ending of the first game after it had been written and mocapped. We had to change the ending based on playtesting, so we wanted to make sure that didn't happen again. So we opened it up to feedback earlier. We also opened it up to the actors early, and we had table reads, and we cast our actors early, and we had them all meet each other, and we went through the whole game, sitting, and they read it and they talked to us about it and they gave their feedback, and so that was all great. And so that's probably the advantage that you would get on a AAA game, in that you do get to work with some very good high level actors, and you if you're kind of lucky, and you with someone like Camilla Luddington, who'd played Lara before, she was obviously very well versed in the characters, and obviously you're used to having actors that are bouncing off each other, and you can kind of get them all in the same room. With smaller projects, you're probably just, you know, guessing each actor in, and they're just in a sound booth doing their lines, which is kind of a lot more challenging. But I think studios, especially at the AAA level, are starting to get their actors in earlier, even if it's just sort of for brainstorming, for testing out ideas. That can be really useful. And I think certainly with indie scenes, building relationships with kind of young actors that aren't necessarily well known, but they're looking for roles and work that you can kind of get in with early, and they can help you flesh out characters. I think that's a really good thing to consider doing if you're indie. There are plenty of great actors that don't cost the world that, you know, really need a break and would love to kind of work on the development of characters within games.
What would you suggest someone who's interested in becoming a writer or a narrative designer? Is it good to start with short stories, or is it good to start the same way you did, with journalism? Or how is it actually possible to get into this line of work?
There's no sort of one route in. Obviously, I got in via journalism and using my contacts, but it's sort of really threefold, I think. It's about honing your skills as a writer, you know, writing, whether it's short stories or whatever. There's no kind of bad thing to do apart from not writing. Writing is a bad thing.
Yeah, writing, obviously, yeah.
Writing, that's a good thing. So it doesn't matter whether it's short stories, whatever inspires you. You know, take some writing workshops, read books, just read a lot in general. Hone your writing, try and make yourself become a better writer, and that, you know, you will by just writing. It's very gradual. It's the same way that, you know, if you were a carpenter, you'd be, you know, practicing making chairs or tables and things like that. Writing is the same. You have to keep practicing it. And then play a lot of games, you know, indie games, AAA games, and everything in between. Look at the way that different ways that narrative is being used. There are, you know, loads of great examples from, you know, the top AAA games all the way down. Narrative is being really used in a very interesting way in the indie scene at the moment. Then, you know, network. Go to, you know, things like Nordic Game or Develop or GDC. Or, you know, find their small game conferences near you, because, you know, guaranteed there'll be a few, and get to meet developers. You know, the indie scene is flourishing. You know, everyone's looking for writers. Kind of make contacts, meet people, make friends. You know, just you know, find little teams that you can start working with. There aren't as many print magazines out there as there used to when I started out, but I think there are more smaller avenues out there than when I started. So, you know, start your own blog reviewing games, or, you know, practice reviewing them and apply to the multitude of websites covering games that are out there now. So there are lots of different ways. There's no one sort of good start, but just those three things I think are central.
Can you yourself still enjoy games while you play them, or do you often think, oh my god, this is very bad writing, so can't really enjoy playing this?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to actually, for downtime, I'm not always playing games with a huge amount of writing in. Like, I do really enjoy strategy games, which don't, because of the way they sort of tax my brain, they don't tend to have a lot of writing in, so I guess I don't have to think about it that much. But I can still enjoy games. Like, you have to sort of switch a part of your brain off in terms of not trying to analyze things and just sort of enjoying the experience as a player rather than picking it apart. But you're still kind of looking to see what people are doing and how they're dovetailing story and narrative and everything I was talking about earlier, and looking at the different techniques that are out there and what you think's working and what's not. Because, you know, everyone else is in the industry. So you've kind of got to keep more or less a little bit on top of things. I'm not as good at keeping on top of games as I used to be. And I tend to come to games about 2 years after they've come out. And, you know, so I've got a huge pile of games to play. And I tend to play a lot of little games on my iPad because they're sort of easy to fit in between the writing. But yeah, I can still enjoy games.
Definitely. Okay. And how about the games you've written yourself? Is it that you enjoy them once they are published, or is it really hard because you always think about, oh, we could have written that a little bit better, or that scene doesn't really work once you see it?
Yeah, it's hard. I don't play the Tomb Raider games. My partner does, so I see them being played during the process. It's difficult to play your own games, I think, for exactly those reasons that you see all the cracks that wouldn't necessarily be perceptible to other players, but yeah. as a developer, it's difficult. So I don't tend to. I've played the Overlord games actually. And those are good because I tend to forget what I wrote. So the Overlord games being funny, I'll find myself laughing at a line that I wrote because I've forgotten it, that I've written it. And Mark Silk, our voice actor, delivers them so well that they make me laugh. So, or the kind of animations too. So the Overlord games are probably the only ones I've managed to kind of play. But that's just because, you know, as a kind of artist, you know, you make your creation, you put it out into the world, and it sort of belongs to the world, more or less. It doesn't belong to you as much anymore. It belongs, so the game kind of belongs to the players, it doesn't sort of belong to me. So it's hard with my own games, but there's plenty of good stuff out there to play.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, obviously you're always your, towards your own stuff, you're always your hardest judge. All right, thank you very much. That was very interesting and very insightful about the job of what actually a narrative designer or a writer in the games industry is doing. So thank you very much for taking the time. And,
you're very welcome.
All right, see you soon, hopefully, at some other games conference.
Yeah, definitely.
Bye-bye.
Bye.